Welcome back to God Books, the podcast where we talk to booksellers and bookmakers from all over the world. I'm Antonia, and today I'll be taking you to Berlin. If you walk down Linienstrasse, in the heart of Berlin's gentrified neighborhood Mitte, you will come across beautiful little shops, a Japanese cafe, cozy restaurants, and more recently, an intriguing space called simply About. This is a bookshop with a unique concept. Its owner, former art curator, picks a theme and then runs with it, selecting books that fit into its theme for a while. Every 3 months or so, the theme changes. The concept of the bookshop, focusing on temporary topics, expands, and occasionally authors, artists, are invited to choose a topic and to curate the selection of books. In the future, Gesine, About's owner, plans to invite a bookseller from another city or country to shape the program of the bookshop, with the idea to open up to further perspectives and controversies. About's owner picked the neighborhood, Berlin Mitte, because she feels independent bookshops should also serve as community spaces, representing a counterbalance in areas otherwise absorbed by purely commercial enterprises. Spaces where people can come together, have a cup of coffee, discuss and dissect one topic at a time, and of course discover a book they might otherwise never have. I recorded my conversation with Gesine back in November, and I'm glad I'm able to release it just in time for Christmas. Hope you're getting cozy with a book and a hot beverage wherever you are. And if you want more Christmas inspiration, last year I recorded some Christmas specials that you can go back and listen to. They are just as appropriate this year as they were last year, and they can inspire you to find some very last-minute bookish gift. Hello, and welcome to God Books on this frosty morning. We're recording this on a Saturday morning. How are you today?
I'm fine. I'm kind of cold. It snowed in Berlin today, but otherwise I'm fine. Yeah, thanks.
And I know you are not in the bookshop right now because I can actually see you, but I usually ask booksellers to take me on a tour, a virtual tour of their bookshops, describing the space, the shelves, the books, whatever you want to describe. So could we do that? Could we imagine walking into About?
Yes. So you will step up two little steps and come into the bookshop, which is not a very big space. It's like about 40 square meters. And we left the walls raw, or better, we took off the plastering, and then we discovered these really nice, very old historical walls, which we decided to leave like that. And then you have a concrete floor, and like a grayish concrete floor, and the shelves on the sides, they're from very light wooden structures. They're like ragged openings on the side. They're very light-hearted in a certain way. And then you have two tables. One is like the book table where we kind of expose the books that we have, and we change that regularly. And then on the left corner, you have the desk where we sit. I didn't want to have it like a counter, which we have usually like in a bookshop where you sit like on a stool or something. It's like it's almost like a working table where you can read and work. And I wanted to have this kind of like work atmosphere of being with books. And then you go in the back room, which is quite different because in the back, we put up a pinkish curtain, a very kind of funky pinkish curtain, which kind of covers the back wall and the opening to the courtyard, which is not a very nice courtyard. And in the middle of that room, there's a column, which we could not remove. So we decided to put up the shelves around the column, which kind of created like this feeling of a swirl, or like a kind of like a little pyramid, or like a book tree, something like that. And then there's a coffee machine also. And on the sides, there are two benches with kind of Bordeaux red velvet cushions. So it's kind of like this cozy atmosphere you have in the back. You can sit there and have coffee. In the front room, there's also, we attach like little tables to the shelf. So you can sit down, there's stools and all different kinds of chairs and fauteuils, like more comfortable, somewhere more comfortable than others. But it's, you know, you're invited to have a coffee and browse around the books and look through the books that you chose, or just, you know, have a chat. So it's kind of like we try to create it like a very open, light, flexible situation where you can walk around.
That sounds amazing, especially now when it's getting cold and you're looking maybe for a cozy place where you can have a nice coffee, a nice book. And I like the idea of the book tree. Maybe that's something to decorate over Christmas to turn it into
something like that. Well, we decided, I think that what is kind of special also is that we, you know, we have this logo About a bookshop. Mm-hmm. So And the graphic designers who developed these ideas around the bookshop, they decided, or we decided to put up the about on the facade and then have like a long loop which goes around the door on the street, basically. And so, yeah, we want to decorate little lights and invite people to come in and share like this kind of seasonal feeling, maybe with coffee and tea and cookies and stuff. Yeah.
Now I wish I was in Berlin this winter so that I could visit it. So I want to ask you a lot of things. I feel like your bookshop has a very clear design and focus on, and you mentioned you work with graphic designers. Your website is also very nicely done as opposed to the websites of many bookshops. So I also want to talk about that. But first, I want to ask you if you could describe the concept of your bookshop and how it all works, because that is very unique and one of the main reasons why I actually wanted to talk to you with that, because I've never heard of a bookshop that does what you're doing. So maybe you can describe that for our listeners. How does About work?
Well, I'm an art historian, so I was always working in the visual arts. I did study also comparative literature a long time ago, but I kind of decided to work in the visual arts. So so I had to do with, you know, exhibitions and concepts around certain topics. So when I kind of spontaneously had the idea, wow, I would love to open a bookshop or have a bookshop and be with books, I never really thought about having like a regular bookshop that offers a large or huge range of all, you know, books, especially new books. I was really interested in creating almost like a kaleidoscopic vision of a certain topic or subject or theme. So I decided to reduce the offering of the proposal of books with a certain topic. So we opened in the summer, last summer, in mid-June, with the topic of laziness. And it was very interesting to see, well, laziness was something that I was always interested in. I was working around Marcel Duchamp. There's a huge ideas going around this, his not working or his refusal to work, which didn't really turn out to be a refusal, but he was like, there was a big topic around that. So when I thought, okay, I would like to open a bookshop, I thought I would like to open with this topic. And then I discovered that it was almost like doing a bibliography around this laziness and topic that it has different layers. So at first I thought, wow, maybe it's too reduced. Maybe the books that I can propose, they're really narrow, but it kind of unfolded into multiple different literatures also. And there was like, you know, political essays, there were fiction, there were capitalist critiques, books on that. So it like unfolded into a multiple layered proposal. So I thought it was something that would work very well in a time where we mostly feel overwhelmed. You know, when I walk into a regular bookshop, looking at the first book table, I'm, you know, intrigued by two or three titles. And I think, wow. And then I walk further and then there's the next book table and there's another five titles. I think they're interesting. And then I walk out with nothing because I'm just overwhelmed. So that was something that that I wanted to do differently. So I think reducing the proposals of books, that would work very well because it was a need that I felt for myself as well. And in fact, when people walk in at first, I almost like excused myself saying, oh, you know, we don't have that many books. And then they say, oh, wow, that's so great, you know, because you're not overwhelmed. You can concentrate. It's kind of a calm atmosphere that invites you to reflect on one topic, which I think is very much welcomed right now.
Exactly. And you may not have that many books quantity-wise, but the idea of really curating books and being very selective and offering these themes that might at first seem pretty simple, right? Laziness, idleness, okay, we sit around, do nothing. But then when you start to peel it layer by layer, you find that, oh, actually, it could be about my relationship with work. It could be about why I get anxious when I'm not doing anything. It could be about so many different things. And it could be literature. It could be nonfiction. And I know that the next themes that you're exploring have similar onion-like qualities where you can peel layer by layer. I could totally understand why a concept like this would work well in the bookshop world. And incredibly original, I think.
I think it also allows you as a bookseller to introduce books that are, because usually you're looking for new publications. And I think if you work around a certain topic, then that allows you also to introduce books that have been out of the focus, like older texts, for example, that you usually don't really come across anymore.
Yeah.
So that's also a big opportunity. I thought, wow, you know, when you walk into a bookshop, you see the new coming books, you know, the books that just came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm offering books, both English and German, by the way, that are older texts from the 70s or even like from, I don't know, for the topic of laziness, I had, texts from the 19th century. So, and they were all included and they all work well. And people were really surprised to find those texts all of a sudden, which they had not expected normally. Yeah.
I think that's great because I was talking to a friend recently about how we all somehow end up reading the same books at the same time. And it feels like it's probably because that's what's getting pushed to us by publishers, by bookstores, maybe by chain bookstores especially. That's what's out right now. That's what's fresh. And that's what's on the bookseller recommend table. I'm not saying that's the case for all bookshops. Obviously, the ones that I've interviewed here are all very different. But that does happen, right? Like, how strange is it in a way that millions of books get published and yet we find this all the time that, oh, have you read the last... nothing comes to my mind right now, but
yeah.
The latest book by Sally Rooney. And yes, of course, everybody else has read it too. And I think it's just so great that you're unearthing these texts that maybe we wouldn't get close to otherwise.
Yeah, it's like a rediscovery, I think, mm-hmm. what I try to propose. Yeah.
And so let's talk about the current theme, because this is also one that's very, very close to my heart. And I think very close to everybody's heart, according to many studies, is the most important thing in our lives. Which is friendship. Can you tell me more about why you picked this theme? What happened once you picked it? How did it all unfold?
As with the topic of laziness, friendship is something that I think we were very much involved with through the pandemic time. During the pandemic, we were thinking about, wow, work. So how do we work? All of a sudden, some people could not work anymore, or everybody was working from home and they could not distinguish, your work and your private life. So, and what do we do when we don't do anything? And how do we feel when we don't do anything? So how much does work kind of characterize us? So I think this laziness topic was very much linked to these experiences and friendship also, because we were thrown back all of a sudden to thinking, well, what's really important in our lives? And we realized, well, friendship, the people that are around us and that shape our lives. So I think these two topics were very much linked to these previous years of an extreme situation. And I thought friendship was also interesting because we all have friends. I mean, luckily, or most of us, or if we don't, then we suffer from that. So friendship is a very central thing in our lives, but there's not really a script around friendship, or there's not really ritual. So I thought that was a very interesting topic because during the last years, there have been some publications that turn around this. They kind of research on friendship, on the social tissue that kind of surrounds us. And I thought that was a super interesting topic to talk about. But interesting is that with the topic of laziness, people walked in and they immediately almost started to talk about their life and laziness experiences. And I thought, wow, this is going to be, the same when people come in and talk about the friendship, which is not happening, very strangely. People come in and they all find this topic super interesting, but they don't really come into the talking, which I think is interesting because that reflects also this phenomena that friendship is almost like an undercurrent in our lives, but it's not a real upfront topic. So even like if you see the novels, for example, I mean, for the topic of friendship, it was much easier, for example, to find novels. There's so many novels, you start with kids' books and then it goes on into fiction, but friendship is always designed as like the backdrop of another story. There's very few fiction, or novels where friendship is in the center. So I think that was a very interesting thing that I'm still, we just had the first shift of topics 4 weeks ago. So I'm still in discovering, wow, what is this about friendship? And so these two topics were related to the pandemic. And let's see what's going to be the next topic. I'm still in the process of reflecting on what could be the next. And yeah, let's see.
Yeah, if you think about how many things in our lives have we changed, or not necessarily changed our minds about, but have we kind of looked at differently over the pandemic? Friendship is definitely one of the central ones. It's affected all of our friendships, either because we couldn't meet our friends anymore or because we realized we had the possibility now to decide who are our close friends, who are maybe just acquaintances or people that we just go out with, but we don't really need to have in our lives in a time like a pandemic. Or or maybe it's because we missed people so much, and as soon as we were able to meet people again in person, you know, we had that reconnection feeling. But it's a very interesting topic, and I thought it's interesting what you say, that people don't necessarily come into the bookshop and start talking. Like, maybe they don't feel like sharing right away. Do you think it's something that, or it's a topic that leads more to introspection, or makes people a bit more self-aware? Or why do you think they don't go into sharing mode once they see the theme?
I think it's very difficult to talk about friendship, in fact. And if you read some sociological researches on it, it is also because we don't really have tools. I mean, we all have these, we always think that friendships that just, you know, they're just going well. And if they're not going well anymore, you just stop seeing each other. You know, when you have a romantic relationship, then you maybe go into therapy. Or if you have, like, with your, you know, problems with your family, there's, like, you know, tools you can go to and try to work things out. With friendships, we don't really have these tools, really. Or, you know, there's no rituals around friendship, which is also a good thing in a way, because, you know, romantic relationships, they have been commercialized also. You know, there's, you know, rings, and, you know, there's all these things that you can do. There's marriage, you celebrate once a year, and all these things. Around friendship, that's nothing of this is really happening. I mean, there's, like, these little things that you give to your friend, maybe when you're, I remember my daughter was giving, you know, they had, like, these friendship bands and stuff like that. But that's very few. So I think friendship, it's not really shaped in a way that you can really talk about it. And very few people come in and they say, well, I just had, like, I just experienced this very painful breakup with a friend. But that's it. So there is, you know, there's a breakup, but you cannot talk about, yes, you know, I can recommend this therapist that you can go to with your friend, and then you talk about things and how can you, you know, what can you do to save a friendship? What do you have to, like, I don't want to use this term, but still, like, invest into a friendship. So it's very difficult even to find a language to talk about this because it stays in such a personal, intimate, you know, field. Whereas, even though I think that friendship also, the way that we are befriended also reflects our society. So it does have, you know, a larger dimension to it, which people maybe they're not even aware of, that in fact, the way we live friendships and that we deal with problems in friendships, that can reflect also how our society is working and which kind of virtues has our society. So I think it's a very interesting thing, but it is difficult to talk about it and to find a language allowed talking about friendship. Much easier it is to talk about love.
Where we have everything kind of served to us. Like, here's how to talk about it.
Yeah.
And the expectations are very, clearly set culturally when it comes to romantic relationships.
Yeah.
Whereas friendship, I think you're totally right. And it evolves, for each person, it evolves over time. Like, I remember how important it was when I was a kid to have a best friend, you know, to put that label on somebody and for them to put that label back on me. And then as you grow up, you kind of think, well, it's kind of a childish kind of best friend, right? You just have different friends and you don't have to categorize it so much. Whereas in romantic relationships, you always have to categorize it.
Yeah. I mean,
now there are, of course, exceptions to that, but most of the times you have to have this one central person. And friendship is more of a free form. Yeah, very interesting topic. I can definitely understand why you picked it. Can you recommend some books from your friendship collection that you think we should read? Maybe some that opened your mind when it comes to friendship and made you look at it in a slightly different way?
Yeah. Well, there is very interesting books on friendship that have a more reflective look on this topic. There is one which I really, really liked and recommend is Marilyn Yalom, Social Sex, The History of Female Friendship. She kind of goes through the history of friendships, which she's looking on female friendships, but she goes from, you know, this idea that friendship, in fact, was in the old days, it was more a male story. It was a male, you know, people were engaged into state affairs. And so they were having friendships, whereas women were at home and they were just like, you know, they did not. And then it just changed. So she kind of gives you an overview of the history and how female friendship also shaped society. And that's a very interesting book I would recommend. And there's one I just finished, which is called Big Friendship from Amina Tussaud and Anne Friedman. That's a bit different because it comes from a very autobiography context where two friends, they got to know each other in the college times. They described their history of friendship, and they also have a very analytical point of views on it. And that's a very interesting book because it kind of pins down some tools also, where you can see, for example, they introduce this term of stretching, that we as friends, there are always moments in our lives where our friendships, they either because friends are living all of a sudden in different contexts, or one have a family and the other doesn't. So there's like these moments where friendships could break because we live our, in fact, our lives changes. And then we have to adapt. And they introduce this term of stretching, and that you have to learn how to stretch in friendships. And of course, there are moments also where you overstretch and then a friendship breaks. So I thought that was a very interesting book, book on friendship. But there's also great novels on friendship, of course, some newer ones also. But one that I would recommend, because I just read that one or two, is Sula from Toni Morrison, which is a wonderful book on friendship. Yeah. So, but there's a mood, but I could go on and on. And I mean, friendship is a topic that is always like very often a backdrop for other stories.
Yes, it's really nice when it becomes the main thing. Yeah. I'm going to add a book that is not written yet to your list, just to put some pressure on Ilana, who some of our listeners will know. She's the co-host from my first season of Got Books. And she is currently working on writing. She's working on writing a book about friendship, where each chapter is a different friendship. And I thought, that's so interesting, because it's true that we cannot really say that we are a certain kind of friend to everyone, right? Every friendship that we have is different, and we are different in every friendship that we have. We kind of transform as we are, you know, when we go to work, we're one person. When we're at home with our partners, we're another person. But also with our friends, we're kind of slightly different, or maybe completely different, depending on the friendship. So I thought that was, yeah, just a cool thing to explore. Like, how do you change, and how does the friendship change as well? This kind of living creature called friendship that you have with every friend in your life.
Well, that sounds like a great book.
Yeah, she has to write it.
You should, we're changing the next. We're going to have a next topic in January. So, but we do also have the books of the former topics we have in the backlog also. So, so even if we always introduce the books that come, because the idea is also that we invite people that come in the bookshop to propose books. So we, include them even in the former topics, which are still in the back room. In the back room also, there's the staff pick from the three collaborators of the bookshop. And great. Sounds like a great book to introduce in the shop.
So I was going to ask you that. That was going to be one of my questions. What happens to the book when they go out of theme? But maybe as an even broader question than that. So the way you run your bookshop is very different than how other bookshops work, right? How they operate, where they have a lot of books, and then obviously they order new books all the time, but there's always this one big space where all the books are. In your case, it's more like a rotating exhibition style type of space, which I think is amazing. So my first question is, yes, what happens to the books when they go out of theme and they go to the back room? But what eventually, I guess, the back room will be full. So where do they go? Let's start with that first question and then let's give a few more, because this is such an interesting concept that I think even just from a business perspective, even though it's not very nice to call a bookshop a business, it's interesting to explore that. No, how does it work? How does it change the model of a bookshop? So where do the books go?
Well, there's a big, intermediate bookseller where I order my books, Libri, and they take the books back. So I can kind of give them back in the period of 6 months. And I just have to pay a little fee of their working fee. So I can send the books back. We do keep some best-selling titles in the back room, in the back of the column on this book tree. And the idea is also that on the website, which has not been finished yet, that you can see the former topics, and that you can see also like a bibliography of that topic, and that you can order through like online order the books. But yes, I mean, we had like this, it was a very fun moment when we had like the first changement. It was very exciting because we, you know, we packed all the books and kind of like said goodbye. And then we cleaned the shelves, and it was kind of like a new beginning. And then we just, you know, unpacked the books that came. It was kind of like a, yes, kind of like an, I don't really like this idea of an exhibition, because people sometimes come in and say and ask, oh, wow, can we buy the books? And I said, yes, it's not an exhibition.
It's interactive. You don't have to just look at it.
So, yeah, I do send them back and then get the new topic books. Mm-hmm. It's pretty well organized. The bookseller universe is a very well organized business. Yeah.
How many books are in your shop?
About 400.
What was the last book you sold in your shop?
In the end, it was All About Love from Musa Wanga.
What would you do if you couldn't sell books anymore?
Actually, I don't really know. I'm so much into book selling right now, I can't imagine anything else.
Perfect answer. What book are you reading at the moment?
I'm rereading Cat's Eye from Margaret Atwood.
And finally, what is your second favorite bookshop?
Well, in fact, I have two. I have Sugar Belt and Sugar Town Books in Williamsburg in New York, and Harmony Bookshop in Varanasi, India.
So I want to talk about your bookshop more. How did the idea come about? I know you haven't been a bookseller for very long, and you mentioned that, you know, you were doing something else before. And I'm just curious to understand a bit this journey from the spontaneous idea you have, I'm going to open a bookshop, to how you actually made it happen. You mentioned you have some collaborators as well. So how did you get other people on board on this somewhat crazy idea of opening a bookshop nowadays? Tell me a little bit about the story of how About came to be.
Well, it's a funny question because it's kind of anecdotal. But I don't know, I was maybe a year and a half ago, I was sitting with a friend and I asked her, so what would you do if you really would, you know, could do what you would like to do? And she answered, and then she returned the question. And I don't know, it just came out of the blue that I thought, yes, I would like to open a bookshop. And I would like to, and even the whole concept just kind of like, it was just like articulated very easily. So, and I was very surprised by myself because I was not ever having, I mean, you know, I know some people that dream about having a bookshop and, you know, forever they wanted to have a bookshop. And it was not really my case. I was, like I said before, I was working in the visual arts, and I thought it was, you know, I was ready for a change, and I felt like I would like to, I read a lot. So I thought, wow, in fact, I'm much more intrigued by books. In fact, it was a very personal thing. So, but it kind of like stayed a more or less vague idea, but very close to my neighborhood. I live in Berlin-Mitte in the historical center. So there was always a street I walked in, it was a bike street, and there was this shop and there was a wine store in there before. And I thought, wow, if ever I'm going to open a bookshop, it's going to be in here. And then I came back from a very long trip and it was kind of a hard return to Berlin. I thought, okay, I'm back in Berlin. I walked down the street again and they just had put up the sign that they were looking for people that would take over the rent. So I thought, oh my God, this is a sign from somewhere. And then it all went really quick. It was so quick that I was breathless, kind of. So I applied and I got the shop. And it was all very, very exciting. And then I have to say, though, that preparing this kind of crazy idea, some month before, I did kind of like sort of an internship in a bookshop that I really liked, Odradek, and they were very friendly and helped me a lot. So I kind of learned a bit how, I mean, because I didn't know if I would like to be on this other side, because I always was buying books but not selling. So all of a sudden I was sitting on the other side of the desk, and I kind of liked it because you started to have conversations, you see what people are reading. So it was a very, and I also discovered that booksellers are very friendly people. When I was traveling, I was doing this kind of unintentional bookseller research. So everywhere I saw a bookshop, I walked in and I started to talk, and I felt like they were very happy people, a bit different than galleries are, for example. So it was like this really nice, welcoming, open, joyful atmosphere that kind of attracted me also into this new idea of opening a bookshop. So yeah, and then everything went very well. And my partner, Leon Schreiber, he's an architect. So he designed the shop, and it was all a very nice, fluid dynamic that kind of went into a very happy thing.
So you found the location for it, right? So you rented that. What were the next practical steps that you took? So just to figure out this industry, right? You did the internship. I guess that helped. Did you have to apply for the internship, or how did you get it?
I think it was a very weird thing that I came in and I said, well, you know, I'm thinking about opening a bookshop. Can I see how it works? No, but I didn't have to apply, no. But yes, I discovered that there's like a huge organization behind the booksellers. I think also which has been developed to fight against Amazon, because the concurrence is so big. So I had to sign a lot of contracts to get into contact. I had to get the books and, you know, to be part of the system. But that was very easy. I was accompanied by a very nice and friendly woman who thought I was kind of crazy to do this. So she was very engaged and said, okay, let's try to make this happen. So I was very much assisted in a very nice and engaged way. So I never had a business before. So I had to learn a lot of things, and every time the cash machine opened, I was like, you know, super surprised. I thought, oh my God. So, all these like administrative things I had to learn. And I think the people walked in, they kind of sensed that everything was so exciting. Mm-hmm. And I think that helped also to, you know, to start a conversation. And that was still kind of very exciting. I still feel like I'm in a big adventure.
Perfect. Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
And you're not doing this alone, right? So you do have a few people that are on this adventure with you. How did you convince them to do this?
Well, Alina Gimpa, who also worked at Oradek, she was very supportive from the very first day. She also thought it was probably kind of a crazy idea to always have only one topic, but she's a very professional bookseller. So she helped me a lot, how to do like more, like, you know, think about more commercial things. She introduced children's books also, which I've never really thought about. She's very much informed about the new books and things like that. And then there's Pablo Dissons, who's a musician, electronic musician, very much interested in nature sound recording. So he was working in this more music-oriented bookshop before, and he thought the idea was just great. So he just joined in also. And then the last person is Amedeo Capelletti, an Italian, also a musician. So I think we're all people that are not, you know, really professional booksellers from the scratch. Even Paulina Gimpel, she's an artist, in fact. So I think that, which is an interesting thing to discover also, that I know quite a bit of booksellers now, and they're not like really, learned booksellers. They just came into the business because of passion or because of, you know, multiple reasons. But, and I think that makes it very pleasant also, because they all have different backgrounds and, yeah, so it's a very nice scene, in fact, which I discovered.
Yeah, I discovered while I was interviewing people for this podcast how people come to be booksellers. It's always an interesting story. I find very few of the booksellers I've spoken to say, well, I was looking for a job and there was this opening and I applied. It's almost always a different kind of story. I was looking to do something more meaningful or something I'm more passionate about, or I was disillusioned with what I was doing before. So I think it's really interesting to understand how do people get to this career path. So in your bookshop, basically it's a bookshop run by artists or people with an art background. What do you think that does for your bookshop? How do some of the things you've taken from the art world reflect into your bookstore? I mean, first there's this curation element, which I guess is a pretty obvious resemblance, but what else do you think you've borrowed from the art world?
Yeah, that's a kind of a difficult question. I think first of all, it is this curating aspect to pick one topic, which I think is a multi-dimensional topic. I try to find, you know, wide topics that have different layers. So I think that's the central thing. I didn't really, in fact, my impulse also to open this bookshop was this almost like playful thing. Well, let's get away from the art world. So I did not intend to have like an aesthetic that is dominant or something. But it's more like this proposal of like a kaleidoscope of how you understand certain themes or what you can do with it. And I think every book has a sort of a, you know, a universe in it that gives you an impulse to think about something differently. So I think that would be something I see when I go into an exhibition, for example, except that this is now books that propose a different or that help you to see things differently, but maybe in the best cases, or to perceive things differently. So I think that's maybe a proposal that I'm interested in, which is maybe analog to creating an exhibition. Yeah, I think, like I said, well, you know, people walking in and asking, well, can we buy the books or can we just look at them? I really try to avoid that. I would like to have contact. I would like that people browse around, like in the back room, you know, like I think I mentioned before, there's these staff's picks. So you can browse and there are very surprising things that you can discover that you would probably not expect there because they come from all these different fields, you know, like Pablo and Amedeo, they introduce, you know, books for music and from nature things. And there's also Lawrence who's selling his honey also in the bookshop. He's a beekeeper also, besides being an architect. So, and he's like very much into permaculture. So there's all these different things that you can discover and find, be surprised by. And you can sit and browse and touch and, you know, have coffee and stuff. I really enjoy very much this kind of like get into the things. Whereas when you go into a museum or an exhibition, it's always, you stay always kind of outside. So it's almost like I try to do the opposite of what I did before.
And that is such a fine art, you know, figuring out what makes people browse, for instance, versus just look from a distance. When is a bookshop intimidating? And when does it allow you to pick up a book and touch it and not feel like that's not allowed or encouraged? I was reading a book about bookshops at one point, and they were saying you have to find this perfect balance between just enough messiness, just enough disorder in the way you've arranged the book so that people feel, oh, it's okay if I mess things up a bit because they're already not perfect to begin with. So I don't have to feel constricted or yeah. But I would find it so hard. Like I'm one of the people who dreams of having a bookshop since forever. And I've been thinking about, you know, what would it look like? What would the shelves be like? How many books? And I think it would be so hard to reach that sweet spot of where, you know, you want people to browse. You obviously don't want them to mess everything up, but you want them to browse. One thing I want to ask you, so we talked about how the bookshop is organized, how you pick your themes. I wonder if overall you think that we need to almost reinvent bookshops, because this concept is very unique. The most similar to it that I could find was a bookshop that we talked about in Japan that only sells one book, right? But that is a very extreme concept for a bookshop. But this idea of selling by theme or looking at one theme at a time is unique. And I wonder if that leads to kind of reconsidering the idea of a bookshop in this day and age where we can go on Amazon and it is very convenient. And booksellers are aware of that, that that's a big threat, the online world and the convenience of it. So do we need to think of something different? For instance, do we need to look at I'm thinking of the School of Life and Alain de Botton's approach on art and books in general would be that we should have them respond to our needs. So imagine like going into a museum and it's not curated by historical period or a type of art, but it's by, do you feel depressed? Go into this room. Do you feel happy? Go into this room. Maybe we could think of something like that for bookshops, right? Do you feel like you need something to lift your mood, or do you feel like you want to think about friendship? So that's a very long way of asking. Do you think we need to reinvent bookshops so that they can survive?
Well, what I really realize is that people walking in and being really enjoying the reduction is, and it's almost everybody who says, wow, I'm so happy that this bookshop is not filled up and offering any book, but that there's a choice that I made. And, you know, we live in this world where we're so overwhelmed by everything almost. I think there is a need of not maybe everybody. I mean, there are maybe people still wanting to go into this huge bookshops where you can, you know, browse for hours and you're still fine. But I think there is also a need for smaller bookshops that just have this reduction and a proposal of that it has been done by somebody before. So I think that what I feel like, you know, talking to the people that come into my shop, that's what they are looking for, and that they're really, really relieved. You almost feel like, oh, it's great. You know, I'm not overwhelmed. I think it's like this need and not to be overwhelmed. But I think, you know, in Berlin, there are so many bookshops that they're so diverse and already have a choice that they propose. You know, there's English bookshops, there's feministic bookshops. You know, I think they're fulfilling certain needs, and I think that's already happening. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, well, my view on this would be that it would be great to have all kinds of bookshops, right? The big ones where you can browse, discover, mm-hmm. find who knows what, and then some that are more like yours, curated, but that still give you a sense of discovery, right? Because you can still go and discover something on your own, but there's a little bit more of a guide in there.
Well,
what is your next theme going to be? Do you know?
No, I don't know yet. But it's a very nice state of mind, because there's like every day there's like multiple topics like coming to my mind. I think, no, maybe not. And I'm writing them down. And it's like, you know, it's kind of like a bubble that comes from down in the depths, and then it comes up to the surface. So I'm still thinking about it, and I haven't decided it yet. I mean, there are some on the list which I would not tell. And the next shift of topics will be in January. So I still have some time. We want to do an event before, like a lecture. So I'm pretty much busy with that. So I'm still thinking.
We'll have to follow you then on social media and everywhere to find out.
Absolutely.
Yes. And finally, before I let you go, I want to ask you something that was on my mind since I first saw your bookshop in a message that a friend forwarded to me. I thought that about is a really great name because it's a preposition and because our minds would not usually go there when we look at naming something, right? We would usually think about nouns, maybe adjectives, but very rarely would we think about a preposition or an adverb. So that's the question I'd love to end on. Like, how did you come up with about? Was it a difficult or easy decision? And what was your thought process?
Yeah, it was a very funny thing. It just came very natural when people ask me, so you're going to open a bookshop? Yeah, I'm going to open a bookshop about different topics. So this about was always in it. So it was like about bookshop. It was like an about bookshop. So I thought, well, maybe that sounds kind of particular. So I was looking for, you know, like kind of now in retrospective, like pretentious names. And then it just, you know, it always came back to this about, and I'm very happy about it. But I think it's, and I think also this logo on the facade doing this about with this loop around. So you enter into something that is not itself proposing anything. It's just like inviting you to come in and discover about things or about topics. I think that was just like, it just couldn't be different. I think it had to be about.
Great one. You can go in and wonder about. Or
yes.
Thank you so much for your time today. I really had fun finding out more about your bookshop, about friendship, and looking forward to seeing what your next themes are going to be and how you're going to surprise us next with everything you're doing.
Thank you so much, Antonia.
Okay. Thank you for listening to That Books today. If this podcast brings you some joy, makes you feel closer to the world of books and bookshops, please share it with just one friend that you know will appreciate it. We'll be back soon with more bookseller conversations. Until then, sit back, relax, and enjoy a good book.